cymbals and the projector went wacko twice. It's never done that before nor since. So maybe tonight we'll have better luck. You don't be pushing a button, Ryan. I did bring notes, so if it goes wacko, at least I can still get through the lesson. I didn't do that last time. Well, let's advance it. But several years ago, when I was teaching the high school and college class, I gave them the option of picking their subjects. That was a mistake. It took me months to prepare. It was a lot of work. Anyway, one of the subjects they asked me to cover was tattoos and piercings. And I don't believe there's anybody in here that had that class except maybe Charlie, but I don't think you did either. I don't think you were gone by that time. So all those students are long gone, so it's time to cover this material again, but in a little different format. Hopefully it's a little more interesting. So we're going to cover tattoos and piercings in the Christian view. If you're paying attention to the songs, you will get a point from a roundabout way. So we'll see. Tattoos. Tattoos are more popular than ever. Currently, 1 in 5 U.S. adults have at least one tattoo. 21%, which is up from 16 and 14% in 2003 and 2008 by a Harris poll. Entertainers, professional athletes, and even the 2009 Barbie version have visible multiple tattoos. With such prevalence and rising interest, we rightly should ask what the Bible says about tattoos. A tattoo is a mark on the body made by inserting indelible ink into the dermis, that's your skin, outer layer, through puncturing or incision. While tattoos have come to experience mainstream popularity, people are still getting tattoos by the thousands for a variety of reasons. Some were tattooed for beautification, so they thought. Many for military identification, some for religious significance, and in many cultures, social status is identified by the tattoos that you have. There's an example. Next Miss America. And there's another one, Mr. Transamerica. The Bible makes no specific reference to tattoos as we understand them in modern times. Some Christians condemn all tattooing as immoral because God clearly forbids them in Leviticus chapter 19, verse 28. Since the word tattooed does appear in this verse in some popular English translations, this argument does seem straightforward. For example, the New IV reads, "Do not cut your bodies for the dead or put tattoo marks on yourselves, for I am the Lord." Other Christians say this passage does not apply because it's Old Testament law, not for Christians. But when you research to try to answer the tattoo question, you see both approaches and contradictory conclusions. Both of these are misleading because, as we shall see, the answer to the tattoo question is that the Bible has nothing clearly to say about the practice of injecting ink under the skin to form permanent pictures, patterns, and messages, which is commonly called tattooing. But Leviticus 19:28 literally translates, "And a cutting for the dead you will not make in your flesh, and writing marks you will not make on you. I am the Lord." The word writing here means to inscribe or engrave symbols or words, and it's only used here. The word for marks is also used only here, and it has an uncertain root, so we're not sure what the word means. Furthermore, the word tattoo did not enter the English language until the late 1700s. And that's why the King James Version, written in the early 1600s, was closer to the literal translation, saying, "You shall not print marks upon you." The background of this law was that Israel, after being rescued from slavery, was between Egypt and Canaan. Recent archaeology indicates that while Egypt did have tattoos, it was limited to women. Evidence suggests that tattooing the body parts of women associated with fertility was believed to be a good luck charm to protect the birthing process. Women also frequently had imprints of the fertility goddess Bes which seems to support this theory. Now, there's your picture of a tattoo on a mummy that's approximately 5,000 years old. So it goes to show you how far back it goes. There was a better picture, but it belonged to National Geographic, and I couldn't get the copyright to put it in here, so I had to use a different picture. But the Geographic picture is much sharper. You can actually see the symbology in it. But since it's copyright, I did not put it in here. In Canaan, evidence indicates that instead of marking the body with ink, more extreme scarification measures like branding, slashing, or gashing were used. And I'll show you a couple examples in a minute. Archaeology, backed by biblical texts, indicates the Canaanites would customarily slash their bodies for ritualistic purposes, 1 Kings 18:27 through 29, especially to mourn their dead or to honor their gods. And that passage reads as follows. At noon, Elijah began to taunt them, saying, "Shout louder, for he is a god. Perhaps he's deep in thought or occupied or on a journey." Remember, this is Mount Carmel. "Perhaps he is sleeping and must be awakened." So they shouted louder and cut themselves with knives and lances, as was their custom, till the blood gushed over them. Midday passed, and they kept on raving until the time of the evening sacrifice, probably in pain. But there was no response, no one answered, and no one paid attention. Leviticus 19:28 seems to imply this when it says, "You shall not make cuttings on your flesh for the dead, nor print marks on you." In light of this information from Egypt and Canaan, it would seem God was forbidding scarification, not tattooing as we know it, specifically. Deuteronomy 14:1, "You are sons of the Lord your God. Do not cut yourselves or shave your foreheads on behalf of the dead." There's pictures, they're not super great, but of, maybe they're better up there, of the markings. This one over here is marked on scarification. It says terror, and that lady up there has marks all over her face and cheek. That's permanent, by the way. That doesn't come out. With this said, while being there's no clear passage in the Bible addressing tattoos, this is hardly a license for unrestrained tattooing. You still need to think before you ink, especially if you're a Christian. The following are guiding questions to help you think through this decision. Modification. Since the Bible does not explicitly forbid tattoos, are there limits? We know our body is not our own, but rather God's temple, from 1 Corinthians 6:19 and 20. The Bible has a high view of the body as God's handiwork, which is not to be disfigured. Non-Israelites did not hold this view. Today, some have permanently modified their bodies to look more like animals or aliens than humans. Some even have horns implanted in their head. In some of the pictures I found, I didn't bring those. We alone are created in His image, and that was the reason for many of the songs we were singing tonight. We must ask ourselves how much we can modify our body to suit our desires while not disfiguring the beauty of the human form as God made it. Here's that passage from 1 Corinthians. "Flee from sexual immorality. Every other sin a man can commit is outside his body, but he who sins sexually sins against his own body. Do you not know that your body is a temple of the Holy Spirit, who is in you, whom you've received from God? You are not your own, you were bought at a price. Therefore, glorify God with your body." Motive. Why get a tattoo? If it's rebellion to parents, that's not acceptable. And while artistic self-expression can be okay, our primary motive for everything we do should be to glorify God. This means seeking to honor and draw attention to Him as God, not to ourselves. Getting a tattoo for purposes of witness might be acceptable, but remember, this is not the primary or most effective way to evangelize. "Look at my tattoo." It is in no way a substitute for verbally communicating the gospel. You are not fulfilling the Great Commission simply because you have a tattoo of a Bible verse. Now, let's go back and look at Ephesians 6. "Children, obey your parents in the Lord, for this is right. Honor your father and mother, which is the first commandment with a promise, so that it may be well with you and you may live long on the earth." So if you're rebellious, That's the wrong motivation. 1 Corinthians 10, verses 30 through 32. If I partake in a meal with thankfulness, why am I denounced because of that which I gave thanks? So whether you eat or drink or whatever you do, do all to the glory of God. Do not become a stumbling block, whether to Jews or Greeks or to the church of God. Modesty. Modesty means not self-promoting. Are you seeking to direct people's thoughts towards God or yourself? Tattoos often accentuate certain parts of the body and get our thoughts directed to that part of the body. It's hard to believe that anyone with a tramp stamp, that means a tattoo on your lower back in case you didn't know, is really seeking to direct people's thoughts towards God. I don't think so. Thinking modestly can lead you to think about and even limit the size, number, and even location of tattoos. As one on an arm, I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me, Philippians 4. Marketability. Think about it. Will employers necessarily want to hire you? Numerous companies don't want your tattoo to be visible and can actually prevent you from being hired. Many employers will restrict your tattoo, requiring you to cover them up because they're not socially acceptable from a business standpoint. Message. What is it about yourself that you want to communicate to the world? Tattoos are powerful messages, automatically conveying what you value. They're nearly permanent and very well likely will be with you for life. And as you saw with that mummy, 5,000 years later, still there. A growing experience with tattoos is what officially been termed tattoo regret. And as you mature, you may, like increasing numbers of people, regret your tattoos because you've outgrown the message, or changed the values, or switched boyfriends or girlfriends. Money. Is it the wisest use of money? One website, Tattoo Info, says you can expect a basic price of $80 to $100 per hour. Very few shops will touch you for less than $40. That's between 2004 and 2009. We're responsible to God for how we use our money. It's also important to keep in mind that the removal technologies are more expensive than getting the tattoo in the first place. Medical concerns. There are real risks with tattoos. The Mayo Clinic warns don't take tattooing lightly. They resulted in severe allergic reactions, infections, scars, and blood-borne diseases like hepatitis B and even hepatitis C. Tattooing deliberately opens the skin and exposes your blood to unknown bacteria. Tattoo parlors are not medical clinics, although they are puncturing skin and exposing blood. Remember, your skin is your largest body organ, and it's your first line defense against infection. So if you go poking it, not smart, my opinion. Piercings. We'll put more of these pieces together in a minute. Let me get on through piercings. Piercings can be a matter of contention among Christians. While some sport multiple piercings, some go as far as to equate piercings with witchcraft and paganism. And sometimes it is. So what is the truth? Are piercings fine, just like a bracelet or a necklace? Are they forbidden by God? Let's consult the scriptures. The Bible doesn't often address piercings. When it does, it's typically a casual mention. For example, all the way back in Genesis, when Abraham sent his servant to ask for Rebekah's hand for his son Isaac, one of the gifts he sent to Rebekah was a golden nose ring. After the camels had finished drinking, he took out a gold ring weighing a beka, which is half a shekel, and two gold bracelets for her wrists weighing 10 shekels. That's a lot of weight. But how do we know that the first ring was a nose ring? Because it states so later in the chapter in verse 47. Then I asked her and said, "Whose daughter are you?" And she said, "The daughter of Bethuel, Nahor's son, whom Milcah bore to him." And I put the ring on her nose and the bracelets on her wrists. That's the servant. Now let's look at this. Notice that the verse says the bracelets were placed on the nose and wrists respectively. Did the servant have the time to pierce her nose first, or did he just place it on her nose? The passage doesn't indicate, that either the nose or the wrists were pierced, but why would the piercing of a wrist be necessary to put a bangle or a bracelet on? There's a nose ring with a couple others. A couple of times the Bible does mention piercings in a negative way, along with fine robes and linen garments. The issue in these passages is haughtiness, neglecting the poor, not the wearing of the jewelry and the clothing itself. Here's one of them. In that day, in Isaiah 3, 18-23, the Lord will snatch away their finery, the bangles, the headbands, the crescent necklaces, the earrings and the bracelets, and the veils, the headdresses, the anklets and the sashes, the perfume bottles and the charms, the signet rings, the nose rings, the fine robes, the capes and the cloaks, the purses, the mirrors, and the linen garments and tiaras and shawls. They must be in really good shape to carry all that weight. One passage in the Bible shows a positive correlation with piercings. God talks about his lavish love for Israel in Ezekiel 16, comparing Jerusalem to his wife, saying, I will put a ring on your nose, earrings on your ears, and a beautiful crown on your head. That's Ezekiel 16, verse 12. It seems unlikely that God would paint an image of himself engaging in any sinful practice. Instead, it shows God as honoring and loving Jerusalem. Piercings were an ordinary part of an ancient Near Eastern culture. They're important. Even now, ear piercings have been common in Western culture for a long time. This is not to mention its popularity in other parts of the world. However, this does bring us to 1 Corinthians chapter 10, verse 23. I have the right to do anything, you say, but not everything is beneficial. I have the right to do anything, but not everything is constructive. Just because piercings are not wrong doesn't necessarily mean that they're always good. Follow that. When deciding on whether to get piercings, you must consider your intentions. Are we simply going to try to fit in? Are we trying to be rebellious? Are we trying to make a statement? In our placement, what is our intention? Is it to be sexually provocative? Just like when we choose our clothing, we must consider whether we're operating in a God-honoring way, and that will be different for each of us. After consideration, another consideration is whether we're actually harming ourselves, putting outward beauty above taking care of our own bodies. Though most piercings are benign, some can significantly alter the body or even hinder normal bodily functions and daily activities. Again, just like clothing, sometimes vanity can get in the way of doing the things that we really need to be doing. Some claim that piercings can be a ministry tool. Christian symbols or statement pieces can spark conversation, leading to openings to share our faith. In the end, it's important to remember Colossians 3:17, and whatever you do, whether in word or deed, do all in the name of the Lord, giving thanks to God the Father through him. 1 Corinthians 10:31 says, so whether you eat or drink or whatever you do, do all for the glory of God. So whether we choose to have tattoos and piercings or not, the important thing is we focus on God. 1 Samuel 16, verse 7, covered this in class a few weeks ago. People look at the outward appearance, but God looks at the heart. When Samuel was selecting David, and he got his brothers first. So, how are Christians supposed to be recognized? This sort of touches on what Daryl spoke of this morning. Rather than by piercings and tattoos, John 13, 34 and 35. A new commandment I give to you, that you love one another, even as I have loved you, that you also love one another. By this, all men will know that you are my disciples, if you have love for one another. Points to ponder. Would you consider tattooing or piercing your toddler? Would you allow your teenage daughter to pierce her ears? This was a big deal when I was a kid. 50, 60 years ago. course, they couldn't wear makeup. Girls couldn't wear makeup then either until they hit a certain age. Would you allow your teenage son to pierce his ears? Would you allow your teenage daughter to pierce more than her ears? Would you allow your teenage son to pierce more than his ears? Or other than his ears, if you want to question it that way. Do you have a say when your spouse gets pierced? Or maybe I should ask, did you have a say when your spouse got pierced? Would you allow your teenage daughter to be tattooed in a visible location? Would you allow your teenage daughter to be tattooed in a discreet location? I see no heads nodding or anything, just looking. Would you allow your teenage son to be tattooed in a visible location? Or how about a discreet location? Do you have a say when your spouse wants tattooed in a visible place? Or did they just show up with it? Do you have a say when your spouse wants tattooed in a discreet location? What is your motivation for acquiring a tattoo or a piercing? Will you accept a nose ring to show your enslavement to Jesus Christ? There's an example of someone that's just about made themselves unrecognizable. So in a minute, I'm going to start in the invitation. Before I do that, I've got time. I'm going to always be asked my opinion. So what opinion would this old man who's been around a long time have about tattoos and piercings? I would not recommend any of them. The health risk is tough enough. But our bodies belong to God. They're a vessel for Him to use for His glory. And I'm not convinced that most of the tattoos or piercings are going to help bring anybody to Christ. I know that's my opinion. So take it for what it's worth. If you're a Christian, why are you one? We sang lots of songs this evening about being a servant following God. And we do it willingly and we desire to. If you're not a Christian, do you know that God loved you so much before you were born that He provided a way for you to be redeemed or bought back from your wickedness that separates you from Him, the Almighty God? If you know, what are you waiting for? If you don't know, ask for teaching. Your very life and existence depends upon it. Slide 70. Revelation 22:17. The Spirit and the Bride say, come. Let the one who hears say, come. Let the one who is thirsty come. And the one who desires the water of life drink freely. You may stand.